It's 8:11, and good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now from Utah State Parks, park naturalist Kathy Donnell. Good morning.
Good morning.
A lot going on. It's summertime,
yep.
Right?
Things are gearing up for summer. So on Saturday, we have Free Fishing Day. That's June 6th, and it's also National Trails Day. So it's a great day to get outside and do something. Utah State Parks annual passes are available for $75 and $35 for people 62 and over. Annual passes are good for day use only, which does include boat launching, but not camping. Over at Deer Creek, dogs are allowed in the campground, but not on the beaches or the trails. Due to the quagga mussel suspect status and funding issues, the Charleston ramp is closed for the next 3 years, so you cannot launch there. All boats must start the decontamination process upon leaving the reservoir. This means all plugs must be pulled and live wells drained. The dry time is 18 days in spring and 7 days in the summer. If you are going to another reservoir within the next 30 days, please call 435-654-0171 to schedule a decontamination. At Wasatch Mountain State Park, all campgrounds and golf courses are open. Weekends are busy and campgrounds fill up. Visitor Center and the museum is open daily from 8 to 5. The fishing pond is open from dawn till dusk, and fishing has been good. DWR stocks the pond weekly with about 600 rainbow trout. Poles can be rented from the Visitor Center. Guardsman's Pass and Snake Creek Roads are open. There is still a little snow up on Snake Creek Road, and people have still been getting stuck. It is best to go up the Cascade Springs trailhead by Soldier Hollow. Wasatch is implementing a day use fee this summer. It will be $7 per carload up to 8 people. Upcoming events include Huber Grove tours on either Saturday or Sunday each weekend, hikes on June 13th, 17th, and the 21st of this month, an evening program about snakes on June 27th, and remember National Trails Day and Free Fishing Day this Saturday, June 6th. Wasatch sponsors the Hiking Brag Tag for Heber Unplugged program. Kids need to hike a trail in Wasatch to earn their badge. RV and boat storage is still available. Please call the park for more info. Wasatch is spraying weeds today, Thursday, at Dutch Hollow. Please stay off the trails until tomorrow morning. The Friends of Wasatch Summer Picnic is June 13th. Go to friendsofwasatch.org to sign up. At Jordanelle State Park, water is rising and is at about 80%. All boat ramps are open at Hailstone. Boat ramp at Rock Cliff is dirt, but the water is coming up. All campgrounds are open. Nature Center is open from 1 to 5 on Fridays and 9 to 5 on Saturday, Sundays, and holidays. The PCSUP Paddle Pedal Paddle event is this Saturday, June 6th at Rock Cliff. It's a 5-mile paddle, 10-mile bike ride, and a 5-mile paddle race. On June 20th and 21st, it's the Park City SUP Festival. There will be paddleboard races, music, and vendors at the beach. On June 20th is the Cooperative Weed Spray Day on the Perimeter Trail and at Rock Cliff. At Rockport, all campgrounds are open and available for reservations. Reservations are recommended, especially for weekends and the more popular campgrounds such as Juniper and Cedar Point. Boating campsites are available and a great way to get away from the crowds. Call the park at 435-901-1117 to reserve them. The old church below the dam is a great place to have a family reunion or a wedding of your dreams. Camping fees start at $12 per night or to $24 per night for hookups. Rockport has evening programs throughout the summer, including bird programs and scorpion hikes. Day use fees are $10 per carload or $5 for seniors 62 and over. Fishing has been really good with anglers catching limits of large rainbows and brown trout. Trolling from boats is best, but bank fishing is also productive. Smallmouth bass are also hitting using soft plastics around the rocky shorelines. Wildlife viewing is great right now with lots of waterfowl, including baby geese, ducks, and pelicans. Mule deer sightings are also common. It is a great time to visit Rockport State Park. And at East Canyon, it's open. Everything is open except for the boat ramp. Restroom is closed for remodeling. Current day use fee is $10 a day or $2 at the pull-off areas with a restroom. Current camping fee is $15 for primitive sites, $24 for partial hookups, and $28 for full hookups. Group sites are available upon request. Mormon Flats Trail is open but still wet in areas. The new trail on the north end of East Canyon will be open soon. People are using power bait and for rainbow trout and pop gear from boats. June 27th at 5 p.m. we'll kick off the history series at East Canyon. The series will run the summer months on the last Saturday of the month. Be aware that Ragnar is coming through East Canyon on June 19th and there is a triathlon on June 27th. Camping reservations can be made at reserveamerica.com or by calling 1-800-322-3770. For more information about state parks, visit us on Facebook or at stateparks.utah.gov. This is a great time to visit state parks, and there's a lot to see and do outside.
Okay, Kathy, great. Thanks. See you next month. A long meeting for the Summit County Council yesterday. On the phone with me to try and sort through things, I have Council Member Claudia McMullen. Good morning, Claudia.
Morning, Leslie.
Let's see. Let's start with the Long Mountain Accord discussion, getting focused on the question of, as you put it, Claudia, are we getting benefits from the Accord process versus what risks are we taking? What did you think? What did you think after all was said and done?
I thought it remained clear as mud, frankly. I have, you know, conflicting opinions on what is and is not binding. You know, our counsel, Dave Thomas, suggests that the program charter, while not approved by the legislative body, was voted on by the executive committee, and the executive committee became the executive board through which decisions are made, which result in these decision memos, which may bind us. And then Laney said, no, that's not the intent. We're not meant to bind anyone to anything. This is a collaborative process. So, it, like I said, it remains unclear to me if there's any document other than the funding agreement, the interlocal agreement, that is binding on Summit County.
You had a report from Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas indicating that in Accord executive board meetings through late May, the Canyon's connection has not necessarily been taken off the table. So is it or not?
Well, you know, the outline, which is also now called the Charter Amendment, which is also called the Accord, which is the blueprint. I'm not entirely sure what this outline is. It seems to be everything. But on that outline is the NEPA decision-making process, and in that process, there is no connection. That is not a transportation connection that is being studied in the NEPA process. Now, there's a section to this outline called Other Transportation Actions, and that's where you find the connection, you know, the study of rapid bus between Salt Lake and Park City via Parleys and Kimball's Junction, and the study of transit improvements on 248, 224, and US 40. And you also find the study of transportation to connect Park City with Big Cottonwood. So this falls under the rubric of an other transportation action, which would not fall within the NEPA study. So the suggestion is, so I think Dave is not accurate that it's still, the connection is still in the NEPA process, if that's what he was suggesting, because that's not true. But it is still on the table as an other transportation action to be studied. That in addition, not just you know, not just a rail connection, but any kind of connection, including over, you know, over the land connection. So Chris Robinson, by the way, once moved from this other transportation to the NEPA study, would be the bus transit, you know, from Salt Lake to Park City, as well as the study of 224, 248, and US 40, because that's where the benefit comes to Summit County, is if we stay in Mountain Accord, and we have to get some benefit, and the benefit would be studying those connections, getting the right people at the table to study and possibly implement transportation improvements on I-80, US 40, 248, and 224.
So are NEPA and EIS, are those interchangeable?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Is the NEPA and the EIS, the Environmental Impact Study, are those interchangeable or are those two different things?
I think the EIS is part of the NEPA process.
Okay.
Or maybe the NEPA process results in an EIS. They're part and parcel of a NEPA process.
All right. So since there's really reportedly not enough money to solve both areas, that's where the conundrum is here, whether
yes.
or not.
Right. The conundrum is a couple things. One, if Mountain Accord is truly really about the cottonwoods and the NEPA process should be about the cottonwoods, then what are we doing? If the group that we need to get together to discuss, to study our problems and our possible solutions would be Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, Park City, and Summit County. If that group needs to be separate or part of the Mountain Accord, that's the real question. Is there a benefit to being in the Mountain Accord at all? Are we going to be part of the NEPA process, the things that are of interest to us? Or even under the rubric of Mountain Accord, is there going to be some subcommittee that's comprised of those entities I just mentioned to help us solve our problems? Is there a benefit to that? Or should we just go on our own and create, you know, put these entities together and get to work solving our transit and transportation issues?
Yeah. And again, I think this all kind of came about from Sandy Mayor Tom Dolan's comments at yesterday's discussion. You know, there was discussion about, well, he's just one member of the executive board. Others saying that Sandy City has a lot of clout on the Wasatch Front. So who do you think would take precedence here?
Well, you know, I don't sit in these meetings, so I can only go. I totally get what Dave Thomas is saying. It's basically the theory that lots of people share, which is almost that this is a ruse to get Sandy City connected to Park City and their Cottonwood situation resolved. But the connection to Park City being important to Sandy has always been a premise that everybody believed. But then, on the other hand, you've got Chris and Andy sitting at the table and Lainey saying, no, that's really not what's going on. He is just one voice. And if you polled the group of 24, the vast majority, more than a supermajority, would be in favor of regionally trying to solve Summit County and Park City's transit and transportation issues as well, including taking the tunnel off the table. So I don't know. I'm going to have to go with Chris and Andy and Lainey on this, even though I have my suspicions.
Okay. So do you have an answer yet to the question, can a decision by the Mountain Accord be forced on Summit County?
No. I mean, No, I don't believe we do. I believe that if what Dave Thomas said is if for some reason, if there's a claim that the program charter is somehow binding and Decision Memo 6 somehow got approved, which did not include a veto, then there's an argument that we would be bound, even if we disagreed, with whatever the action is. But then Dave said, but then we would say, well, it wasn't the legislative body that okayed this program charter, so we would fight that. And then Lainey doesn't know whether it's, Lainey doesn't say it's binding, so I still think there's a risk that makes me uncomfortable because I don't like not knowing whether I'm bound by something other than the interlocal agreement, which is just a funding document. So I still think it's unclear, frankly.
Yeah, so how do you feel about that idea of Summit County just kind of going into its own study process for Interstate 80 and you know, the 240 or 248, 224, and US 40?
I would like to wait and see what comes in July if we can get into the NEPA process the studies of I-80 and 224, 248, and 40, I would probably be more willing to stay at the table. If it stays as an other transportation action and not part of the NEPA process, I would like to know more information about what that means and what is the benefit of staying under the rubric of a Mountain Accord. I'm on the fence still until I know more.
So is there a deadline in terms of Summit County moving ahead with phase two, or?
July 13 is sticking in my mind, and I'm not sure exactly why. I don't know if it's another executive committee meeting where they vote on this outline, and everybody, you know, we have the opportunity to have our input in the outline, and it gets voted on. I just know July 13th is a deadline.
All right. You also received a letter from a subcommittee under the accord called the Federal Designation Task Force. They're proposing some federal designation for about 2,000 acres within the Forest Service boundaries. Of that, about half, 967 acres, is in Summit County next to the canyons and Park City Mountain Resort. So at first blush, do you want to look at a federal designation? And if so, what kind of designation would you favor?
I believe it is too soon for me to have an opinion on that. I think we're going to do a work session on it, but we're going to definitely get more information. What the difference between the designations means? What do our constituents want? Right? What does Bale want? You know, Bill Rock came in front of us last night, and he hadn't had time to form an Bale hadn't had time to form an opinion on what, if any, federal designation one and two, if one, then which one. I'd like to know more before I form an opinion. Period on that.
Okay. Let's see. Let's move on. You had a lengthy discussion with the Snyderville Planning Commission as well. Rick Bruff describes it as kind of a face-off. The focus, the provision that the county will approve no further entitlements beyond base zoning until existing entitlements are substantially exhausted. Snyderville Planning Commissioner B. Peck told you that she was taken aback and disappointed that the county council wasn't more supportive of that provision when it came under attack at a public hearing. She says that they got the message from public input at a lot of meetings over months to aggressively manage new entitlements, and she thought that the council was telling them to be timid. So maybe you could respond to B. Do you feel like it was a reprimand to the county council?
Do I feel like what B was reprimanding the Summit County Council?
Yeah.
Yes, I absolutely do. Well, you don't accuse us of throwing staff under the bus, and I don't think that, and me not thinking that's a reprimand, and I didn't appreciate it. I did appreciate the fact that they've worked very hard for a long time to get the document in front of us that got in front of us in May, and that there was tons of public input. But at the end of the day, here's what I know. The planning commissioners themselves were not unanimous in the wording of 2.3, and they wanted Summit County Council input. We're the legislative body that decides what wording works and what doesn't. They themselves weren't particularly enamored of the wording. They had conflicts in their own body, even though they did do a unanimous, recommendation to us. Now, when we came to our first public hearing on this, by the way, so we haven't had 2 years of public hearings. We've had one public hearing. And that one public hearing elicited testimony from the audience that was, if not persuasive, it got our attention. And when it comes down to what basically is a moratorium, or what felt like a moratorium, I'm going to think long and hard before I approve a document that suggests a moratorium for something as nebulous as until existing entitlements are significantly exhausted. So we want to vet this more. And one of the ways we wanted to vet it more was we wanted to hear from the Planning Commission last night. Why? What's the why behind this? And are there other solutions other than what appears to be language that appears to be a moratorium? And we came up with some good ideas, which we're going to hopefully see next week, and then we're going to vet that in another public hearing. And if we have to have more public hearings, we'll have more public hearings. But the fact is, what we don't want to do is hamstring ourselves in solving our problems. So like Roger said last night, what if I said, find me a piece of land for a parking ride, and it's rural residentially zoned. Under this, can I have a parking ride? It appears it could not. But then then people argue, well, but it's not regulatory in nature. In any event, you don't want something that sounds like a moratorium if what you really want is flexibility to solve our problems. And that's the kind of language that we're going to hope to see next week, where there's some flexibility in the language, where it says things like, unless there's a compelling community need or interest, or the impacts are mitigated, things like that. So
I felt
reprimanded, but I think it was a good I think it was a good meeting that ended with what's going to be a good solution.
So your bigger fear in this is being sued as opposed to perhaps unrelenting growth if you kind of opened it up?
My biggest fear is what I just said is I don't want to be hamstrung to solve. I don't want to be in a situation where we can't solve our own problems if an opportunity presents itself because we have what appears to be a moratorium. I want the flexibility of being able to say, yes, that piece of property over there is perfect for a park and ride. Oh, shoot, it's rural residential. Oh, shoot, we have this prohibitive language in the general plan. That's a big concern of mine. Another big concern of mine, which I brought up last night, is if you do a moratorium, for example, or something akin to one, and you say no more rights other than base zoning, for example, you've got these parcels out there in the county, like, for example, on Rasmussen Road. Now, they have a rural residential designation, which makes no sense there. It was a default zone back in the day. Now, if you put a moratorium, that means your default zone goes forward for some indeterminate amount of time, and it doesn't make sense in the first place. The zoning makes no sense in the first place. So those are the kinds of issues that crop into my mind when I hear, you know, no more than base density. But I think we have a way to solve it, and we're going to see better language next week.
All right, because Community Development Director Pat Pudd suggested putting some new language in, allowing code amendments to encourage infill at nodes and consider projects that meet a compelling public need or interest. So you think that'll take care of it?
I think I don't think we're game for all five of those points that he made, but I'd like to see, for example, I would like to see the compelling community need or public interest justifying proposed change to existing entitlements. I'd like to see potential community impacts and necessary mitigation required for any proposed increase on undeveloped land. I'd like to see wording like that that makes it gives people an opportunity, gives landowners an opportunity to prove one or two of these things to get more density.
It was mentioned in passing that the economic development manager, Jeff Jones, is reporting there's a critical need for workforce housing. Would you perhaps favor new entitlements for something like that?
Sure. I'm in favor of solving problems. And if it means, you know, changing the zone from rural residential to give me a park and ride, then I want to do it, if it makes sense under all the circumstances. And the same with workforce housing.
Okay. Finally, the anti-idling ordinance. The council approved the revised ordinance. It has tougher provisions. Still a law mostly about education. Do you want the county sheriff to devote more time to watching idlers? Or
I'm most interested in signage and education. And yes, I do want the county sheriff. If there's somebody who's not in a car and it's idling, I want to be able to call somebody and get somebody cited for that. Do I want all of our resources devoted to that? Hell no. But I want the county sheriff's office to help us enforce our idling ordinance. Absolutely. But most importantly, I want an education campaign, and I want the businesses to take, to do their part. I want the schools to do their part. I want the county to do its part. I think we just need to get the word out.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes. One thing. We have on Saturday at 4 o'clock in two different locations, there's going to be fundraisers for Jeremy Morgan, who's doing better. He's our volunteer North Summit fireman who got in that awful accident a couple weeks ago. And it's going to be at the North Summit Fire Station, and there's going to be one at the corner store. And he really needs our help, so I encourage everybody in the community to come out and support Jeremy.
Okay. Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's 8:37 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Becca Gerber was the first person to announce that she would be filing for Park City Council and was to do that upon her return from vacation. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning.
So have you made it official?
I did. I went in. I jumped off the airplane and drove straight to the Marsac building and signed the papers.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to run for City Council.
I grew up in Park City. I moved here with my family when I was 9, and I got to be a kid that grew up skiing and swimming at the racquet club and riding my bike all over town and riding the bus. And I just had a really wonderful, beautiful childhood here. And I graduated from Park City High School in 1998 and then graduated from the University of Utah with a degree in political science. And so I've kind of been around town since then. I've worked at the canyons. I taught skiing. I taught swimming lessons and swim team, even to your daughter, at the Racquet Club for years. And I've just really been involved with the community and really enjoyed being in Park City.
Yeah. So why council, though?
So really, you're a big part of the reason that I wanted to run for council, because a year and a half ago, I was sitting in the dark at the Egyptian Theater, and I was listening to you interview all the candidates for city council and the mayor in the city council debates. And I was listening to you ask questions about affordable housing and the middle class and the environment. And as I looked at the panel of candidates up there, I realized that there was really no one speaking for my demographic as someone who grew up in Park City and has really been involved in town from that perspective. And also someone who's workforce and works in the ski industry. And I am about 10 years younger than any of the other candidates right now, or anyone on council, at least 10 years younger. And so I am able to represent a different demographic in Park City.
Well, that was one of my questions, that you certainly are the youngest candidate to apply for a long time that I can remember. I mean, why is it important that somebody from your age group, though, have a seat at the table?
Right now, my friends are all getting married and having kids, and people are working and trying to find ways to stay in Park City. And I'm watching people one by one get married and move to other towns to have their families and raise their families. And it's really sad for me. I had such a great experience growing up here, and it doesn't feel like it's quite as easy for people in my demographic, my age range, to stay in Park City once you start making those big life changes. And it's a really hard town to be in the workforce in. It's very difficult to find housing. You work really, really, really hard to stay here. And a lot of people are moving to Camas and Midway and Heber and Salt Lake City. And that's only adding to our traffic and congestion. And so I'd love to be a part of finding some solutions to keep a wider variety of demographics in town. And also, just from talking with people in my parents' age, it's hard for older people in town too, especially if you've been in a house for a long time. It's hard for them to downsize. There's not a lot of options for older people in town too. So I can really represent a wide demographic of people in this town.
Yeah. So, I mean, but what do you think you can do to help? I mean, do you have ideas, or it's something that the current council hasn't already thought of?
I think I can bring some different perspectives to the affordable housing discussion going on, and some different options and opportunities. I know that for myself, I grew up in, you know, a big home in Park Meadows with a 3-car garage. And I know that I had a very privileged upbringing. But for me to stay here in the lifestyle that I have now, I've realized that I'm going to have to make some compromises, and I'm very willing to make compromises to be able to stay in town. And I'd like to bring some of the perspective of things that wants versus needs, and how to really make affordable housing in different levels for seasonal workers, yearly rentals, and attainable and affordable deed-restricted housing that's actually going to really meet the needs of workforce and young families in this town.
Yeah. So say something like Park Meadows, you know, it's a single family. I mean, lots of room. I mean, there easily could be some renovations made where there could be an apartment inside, but it's against the CC&R. So, I mean, is that something that you're willing to, like, come up against?
Yeah, I think that there's lots of different options that we can look at. Mm-hmm. And the city's talked about investing in different properties and different ways that they can come in and help with some of these situations, even listening to the city council retreat back in February. And it seems like there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of willingness to go in on some different ideas. I don't know if it makes sense to have apartment buildings in Park Meadows, but there are definitely some areas in Old Town where it would make a lot of sense to have some increased density and some good workforce housing. And maybe in Park Meadows and some of the other areas where it is more single-family homes, the city can come up with some options for small single-family homes in those areas. But again, there's a lot of options, and we can think outside of the box and come up with some new ideas. And it's going to take some smart planning, but I think that there's a lot of willingness right now to do so.
All right. So I know that you are a member of the leadership group. What other skills do you have that you can bring to the job?
Right now, I'm also on the Historic Park City Business Alliance. So I've been sitting in, and I'm very well informed on what's going on Main Street and in Old Town. I also sit on the Park City Recreation Advisory Board and have been very involved with the recreation planning over the past year or so. And then I've worked for the Park City Sunday Market, and I've worked with the city on doing events plannings. And I've been just a part of this community and living and breathing and working here and for such a long time that I feel like I am very in tune. I've been going to city council meetings for the past year pretty consistently and attending everything I can and trying to learn as much as I possibly can. And of course, there's always going to be more to learn, but it's so fascinating, and it's such an interesting community to be involved in.
Now, you have a full-time job working.
I do.
Are you going to be able to manage both?
I have an amazing employer at Aloha Ski and Snowboard, and he's very excited for me to tackle this and to work with me on it. And of course, I'll have to adjust my schedule, but I think it's important that someone with a full-time working job is a part of this and can really represent people that work in Park City.
Right. Well, we saw a lot of money spent in the last municipal election, certainly on the mayor's race. Have you got funding? Are you prepared to put money out?
So, of course, fundraising is going to be a big part of my campaign. But I've talked with some of the other candidates, and I think there's definitely a desire to not go quite as big on campaign spending this year, and especially representing the working class. It's going to be a challenge for me to do some of my fundraising. And I think that there's a lot we can do with really reaching out to people and utilizing some free and different opportunities. And so this is my first time running a campaign. I've got a lot to learn, and I'm excited to start and really dig my heels in and get going.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to tell us?
I think that this is just a really fun new opportunity for a younger demographic and people who grew up in Park City to come out and make their voices heard. And I've heard from so many people that I grew up with in the Park City school system and people who've moved away from town but still have parents here. And I would love to encourage anyone who would like to talk to me to reach out and talk to me. You can get a hold of me via email, BeccaLGerber@gmail.com, or feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or social media. I'm around town, and I would love to speak with you and hear what's important to you.
All right, Becca, hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It's 8:46 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Sunday Market opens for its ninth season on Sunday. In the studio with details, I have the market's executive director, Kate Boyd, along with the director of operations, Michelle McDonald. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
So, not the best weather forecast, but
TBD.
Morning should be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Every year there's always one of those days that everybody starts hemming and hawing that the rain's coming in, and then the skies open up and it's absolutely beautiful.
Great.
So we always have a great positive attitude.
We'll
about
be there
it.
No matter what.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. So tell us, I mean, it opens when?
This Sunday. So we're coming in hot. We are opening this Sunday from 10 to 5. We have a full house, totally sold out as far as vendors. Our music's already booked for the entire season. And tons of great farmers already coming up this weekend, so we're excited.
Good, good. So, again, it's held
right here on
Main Street, yeah.
And, right. the, and the farmer's market on 5th Street by the post office.
By the post office. So location hasn't changed too much.
No, correct. Same footprint. Bike valet is actually moved, so we're really, really encouraging everybody to bike, bus, or walk. And so our bike valet actually will be open on 9th Avenue, as opposed to it used to be tucked in a garage and not a lot of people realized it was there. So this year, we're encouraging more people to bike. We have a free bike valet, totally secure.
Sponsored by Cole Sport.
Sponsored by Cole Sport. So that's a huge push for us.
Okay. So how many vendors do we've got coming up?
We have on the street on Sunday, we have about 170 vendors this weekend. We actually have a lot of new farmers this year. We have 3 more farmers than we've ever had, which is a lot for that little section and this early. Featured artists this weekend, we have a local gal, Hillary, who's doing oil painting on canvas down by the main stage.
Featured chef this weekend, we have Brass Tag from
Deer Valley.
So they'll be located next to the main stage as well.
All right, and then the musicians this weekend?
We have Tres Hombres.
They're awesome.
Yes, and then our fitness. So every weekend at 10 a.m. we have a fitness. This weekend we have 11 House, who will be doing a reggae dance fitness for us at 10 a.m. So it's either going to be reggae dance. Next weekend, it'll be yoga. The weekend after that, Zumba. So if you want to get a nice free fitness class in, 10 a.m. every Sunday, we're here.
Then okay. You can have your Bloody Mary right after and not feel guilty.
All right. You still got the children's garden plan? And
we do. Mm-hmm. We've got the bounce houses that'll be there, the rock climbing wall, face painting. The hula hoop gal will be there.
We have a couple great youth vendors this year.
Oh, that's right.
We have a couple kids that are under the age of 18 that will be coming on different days. They'll be down in that kids section when they're in the market. The first one coming up is a 9-year-old kid who makes dog toys out of recycled materials. Pup cycle.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it'll be fun down there in that kids section.
Yeah, and I know you start with the vendor applications early. Are you filled out, or you still have room for more on certain weekends? Or
we do. We actually opened applications last fall for this summer. Several categories are sold out: food, jewelers,
importers.
Very small. And then in general, the market is sold out for July and August dates in the 10x10 sizes, but we have 5x8 still available all days.
All right. And you, send out weekly emails so people can get on that list if they're interested to find out what's going on each week?
Exactly. They go to our website, parksillysundaymarket.com. There's a little icon on the left-hand side where you can sign up for our weekly email blasts, as well as the park record. We have a half-page ad every Saturday so they can see exactly what's coming up, or they can like us on our Facebook page, and then that also will give them the schedule. So there's plenty of ways to figure out what's going on, but either way, it's a party every Sunday, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's well-oiled machine at this point, huh?
Well, yeah, after thank nine, you. Yes. Yeah, after eight, yes, thank you. After 8 seasons, we figure we finally got it dialed in, so works out really
well.
We
get better every year.
We do. You
we
get
fix,
better,
we
definitely.
Fix
thanks for showing up.
Yeah, you too. Yeah.
Well, I'll just give my friend Beth a pusher because she's your volunteer coordinator.
Yes, she is, Beth Bracken.
So if people want to volunteer, she'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. You can go to beth@parksillysundaymarket.com or info, just any of the telephone numbers on our website. Call us. We'd love to take more volunteers.
We do still have room, Leslie, for local nonprofits that want to participate for free on a given Sunday. That application's also on our website.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Just wanted to remind everybody, we were voted by Cooking Light Magazine as the top farmers market in the country, one out of 8,000. We ended up in the top 50, so we're super excited about that.
Congratulations.
Nice to get these big accolades.
All right. Kate and Michelle, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joined in the studio now by the president of Eats Park City, Ann Gloomquist, along with Alex Harnell. She's a member of the Jeremy Ranch PTO board and also the editor, I guess, or the collaborator for making a new cookbook there at Jeremy Ranch. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Alex, let's just start with a little bit of background here. You're involved also in this group, Eats Park City, and trying to get our school-age kids to eat a little bit more healthy. And then what? Just would hear from parents, oh, it's too hard, or my kids won't eat that?
Well, in general, working with Eats, we really wanted to educate people on that it's really easy to make a quick and healthy recipe and not have to go to processed foods. So our mission was really trying to educate people, and not only in the schools, with the children, with all the things they're doing, but also to get it out to the families. And we just hear from parents all the time that we just don't have time. We've got such busy parents here in Park City that we don't have time to do quick and healthy. And so we wanted to put together recipes that showed that you really can go quick and healthy.
You love a challenge, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Always.
Okay, so was this a collaboration then between your two groups and the PTO and Park City Eats?
Absolutely, yes. Eats Park City concentrates more on educating in the kids, but it really has to go full circle if it's going to stick. And so we came up with some ideas, and Alex took this idea and just ran with it, and it's been fantastic.
So just reached out to the school parents and asking them for their quick, easy, healthy recipes?
Exactly, to faculty as well as students and their parents.
And the criteria really was it had to be 5 to 10 ingredients that are readily available, and it had to have 5 steps in making it. So, you know, this isn't this elaborate chopping and, you know, it takes 45 minutes to make. This is a quick thing that they can even do with their kids. So, you know.
And the healthy part was the ingredients had to be whole ingredients, not processed ingredients, not things you can't pronounce, and they had to be readily, easily available.
Yeah. So how many submissions did you get?
We got about 150. So we have about 150, 160 recipes in the book.
All right. And then what? You just kind of grouped it by breakfast, lunch, dinner, or, you know, meat, vegetables?
Yep. Snacks, mm-hmm. vegetables, vegetarian and pasta, pork and poultry and meats.
Yeah.
And we even have a dessert section.
Absolutely.
The
everything
healthier side of desserts.
Absolutely. You got to eat everything, right?
Right. So, well received then, huh?
It has been. Yep. We've sold it online and through the school, and there's been a really positive response. I've gotten a lot of emails from people just raving about the recipes that have been quick and healthy, and their kids, most importantly, that the kids enjoy them. Because I've always had a handful of recipes that were quick and healthy that my kids like, but then you get bored with them. The kids too. So we thought, probably a lot of parents have a handful. If we just pull them all together, it'd be great to have a go-to book to pick something up and be able to cook something, put it on the table if you didn't have something by 12 o'clock that day.
Can you tell them about a couple of the recipes that are in there, like the power pancakes?
The power pancakes that were submitted, Jenny Flagg, have gotten rave reviews. It's a power pancake made out of bananas and eggs, and that's it. And you mash them all together, and you fry it up like a pancake, and they're absolutely delicious and healthy and quick and easy.
Yeah. Any other favorites?
There's an avocado mango salad that is to die for with cilantro. There's a cranberry chicken that I just made the other day. I had forgotten my in-laws were coming into town. I didn't have dinner, and I was like, ah! So I quickly looked through, and I found this recipe. I had all the ingredients there, mixed them together, put them over the chicken, put them in, and impressed my in-laws with this fabulous cranberry chicken.
Great. So you printed how many books?
We've printed 500 books.
Are you sold out?
We are not sold out yet.
So if somebody's interested?
So if somebody's interested, yes. Right now you can get them at the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School front office. They have them there. They're $10. You can bring cash or a check made out to the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School PTO. And we will be selling them through June while Jeremy is open. And we will have several outlets over the summer that we will be selling them as well. And you can probably, we'll try to have a link on the Eats website to find out where you could buy them, as well as contacting the Jeremy Ranch PTO president, Carrie McNeely, at... Do you want to say what her email is?
Carrie McNeely, you can email her at klcm71@icloud.com, or you can email eatsparkcity at eatspc@gmail.com, and we can tell you where you can find those.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
Just that the proceeds from this are going to go towards helping to fund the healthy snack program at the Jeremy Ranch school. So we're getting... healthy snacks for the kids at twice a week every day out there next year, and that's where the proceeds will go for this.
Well, congratulations. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.